When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And this is another one of my kind of updates, that I'm calling them. They began with looking at Ukraine, but I'm broadening out the update. We'll try to do as many as we can during the week in order to just look at the ever-evolving nature of international affairs and contemporary politics. And of course, the big news story in the world today is Sunday's victory of Emmanuel Macron in France for the French presidential election against the rival candidate Marine Le Pen. This is of huge significance. The fact that Macron, as an incumbent, has won again, as with many democratic countries the world over, the French electorate tends to punish incumbents. And Macron has seemed to buck this trend. Secondly, he has triumphed over the Front National's candidate for a second time, Marine Le Pen. And this, again, really needs to be unpacked, or the significance of this and what this shows us. Okay, so Macron, this surprise candidate from the 2017 presidential election, who in his En Marche program managed to really come from politically from nowhere to defeat the established political parties, a phenomenon which really showed how much the centre left and the left in general had decayed in France since the economic crisis since 2008 and beforehand, a phenomenon that we've seen throughout the rest of Europe. I mean, really, it's largely the product of socialist parties across Europe making devil's bargains with kind of neoliberal capital and ultimately losing anything that was recognisable as a left programme and alienating left voters and all that sort of thing. And Macron was the beneficiary of all of this. His own version of sort of centrist politics, which is heavy on rhetoric and light on detail, rather kind of Obama-esque kind of slogans of hope and change, where ultimately he's quite a conservative figure, one who is more than happy to mobilise anti-Islamic racism when it suits him, to appeal to French capital and banks against the interests of the ordinary French working class. You know, your standard centre-right European politician. And yet he's managed to defeat Le Pen. Marine Le Pen, who became the leader of the Front National in 2011, she took over from her father, Jean-Marie Le Pen. Jean-Marie Le Pen, who in the early 2000s had led a series of kind of shock political upsets to take this sort of fringe fascist movement and bring it into sort of electoral viability. I think it was 2002 he scored about 12 to 13% in the French presidential elections. In 2011, when Marine Le Pen, his daughter, took over, she engaged in this practice that, again, fascist parties around the world tend to do, this kind of gentrification. The British National Party in Great Britain, which has deep roots and connections and origins in the National Front, street fighting, racist, fascist organisation of the 60s and 70s, began to try to gentrify itself to have its representatives trying to use the language of mainstream politics, wear suits and that kind of thing. Well, Marine Le Pen took things further. I don't think it's possible to treat any of this with any kind of great deal of credibility. You should be hugely, hugely sceptical of any fascist or supposedly former fascist party that begins to use the language of liberal democracy. But yet she threw the Holocaust deniers out of the party purely as a result of it kind of impacting electability. She began to dial down the overtly racist rhetoric, the more authoritarian language of reintroducing the death penalty in France was abandoned. And post-Brexit, many far-right parties across Europe have harboured dreams of escaping from the European Union. And post-Brexit, the appetite for this in France, even in the most Eurosceptic parts of France, has dramatically dwindled because the rest of Europe has had a little taste of what it looks like, and it's not very attractive at all. So post-Brexit, Marine Le Pen dropped the rhetoric of French exit from the European Union. It's strongly suspected that had she become president, her strategy would have been to ally with countries like Viktor Orban's Hungary and to gradually to stay within the European Union, the customs union and the single market and the euro and the Schengen area, but gradually undermined the rule of law within the EU to allow whatever reactionary policy she would wanted to have introduced into France. But fortunately, these things are not going to happen, at least not for another 5 years. The way in which centrist commentators and politicians from around the world are talking about Macron's victory seems oddly reminiscent of the character in the horror movie who assumes that the monster's being killed and is feeling all a bit too cocky, and we know what happens to that character. I think it's important to be very, very circumspect at this moment that an openly fascist party, even one that claims to have gentrified itself, scored, polled 42% in a French presidential election. This is the closest that we have come to an openly fascist leader. I mean, de Gaulle had his moments, in all fairness, coming close to power in France. Irrespective of how well Macron actually did in the end, one of the reasons for Macron doing well is because in the first round of voting, Mélenchon, the socialist candidate, was defeated largely because a variety of other small socialist parties fielded their candidates and devoured one another's vote. Mélenchon directed his supporters to support Macron, to vote for Macron. So you have a left candidate saving the bacon of a centrist candidate to prevent a fascist candidate coming to power. Now, unless Macron in the next 5 years can do what is required in order to appeal to those voters, to create social policies that they will find attractive, then the chances of the same set of circumstances being repeated at the 2027 presidential election are looking less optimistic. We have to be, I guess, glad. I mean, of course we have to be glad that we have not woken up to a fascist president in France. One reason above all for that is that it would have presented Putin's Russia with an historic opportunity. The links between Putin's regime and the Front National in France are pretty open and explicit. There are there's clear evidence of assistance, political and potentially financial, there. Matteo Salvini in Italy, Nigel Farage in Great Britain, and a whole host of other far-right characters across Europe have been immensely outspoken over the last few years in their admiration for Vladimir Putin. And this cannot be anything other than orchestrated, financed, funded, part of a projection of Putinist soft power, and to have a Putin supporter in France at this stage would have been nigh on catastrophic for the fortunes of Ukraine and for the unity of the European Union and a whole host of other considerations. So Western liberal democracy has had a very, very lucky escape. And what the next 5 years holds is an interesting question. Now, France itself has had a fascist movement since the end of the Second World War. The Front National itself was founded by a French SS officer, Pierre Bosquet, who served in the Waffen-SS Charlemagne division. The SS recruited soldiers from all over occupied Europe There were Belgian, Danish, French, and Dutch SS units who fought everywhere between Russia and all the way back to the Battle of Berlin. And Busquet himself was a prime example of how the kind of the afterlife of Nazism lingered on in sort of in often hidden ways across Europe. If you ever get the chance to read Tony Judd's amazing essay From the Houses of the Dead, his argument is that modern Europe is built on the ashes of the Holocaust, and that our modern historical memory is shaped by the experience of mass complicit mass kind of complicity in the Holocaust across Europe. And France is no different. The Vichy regime in France was a willing deporter of Jews to the Drancy transit camp and from there to the Reinhard camps in Poland and Auschwitz-Birkenau, where they were murdered en masse. And the connections between the legacy of Nazism and institutions like the Waffen-SS and European fascism is something that slightly sets European, continental European fascism apart from British or American iterations of fascism. There aren't really any in the various British fascist parties that have existed after the Second World War. There isn't anyone that's really sort of served in the SS. That was not possible. So there is that direct lineage from Nazism all the way through to the Front National. This is what Marine Le Pen has sought to distance herself from. The other strands of fascist thought in the post-war era, particularly Poujadism, are still very much kind of alive and well in French protest. Poujadism was this kind of localism, this idea that the kind of the little guy, the independent farmer, the trader, the artisan, the baker, the small bourgeois was under threat at the end after the Second World War, not just from the evils of socialism, but also from kind of American consumerism and mass culture, threatening to sweep away a greatly weakened France. But the subtext to Poujadism was there was always a kind of a virulent anti-Semitism that ran through it all, saying, it is these Jews that are responsible for our misfortune, not to kind of rather ignoring the fact that meant that France's Jews had declined immensely in number after having been denounced by the sorts of people that Poujade had saw as his electoral base. So from this kind of rich tradition, which is also mixed with a kind of virulent Islamophobic hatred, that's a kind of a key part of French fascism, directed mainly against poor and working class Algerians, Moroccans, and Tunisians who came to work in France. These obviously former French colonies come to work and live in France and live very often in the kind of the roughest of the banlieue estates, which ring cities like Paris. And there is this kind of view that these are non-French citizens, even though the way that French citizenship always worked, even when France had an empire, was that colonial subjects were citizens of France. this kind of this sort of anti-Islamic cultural war sort of warfare that goes on, which was, you know, for the avoidance of doubt, weaponized by Macron and by people like Nicolas Sarkozy, and all the way back to Jacques Chirac. These center ground, supposedly liberal politicians who are the kind of the bulwark, supposedly, against the fascism of Marine Le Pen, are perfectly happy to engage in a little bit of racism when it suits them. Here's the blind spot. So there are commentators around the world who are breathing this big sigh of relief, saying, oh, hurrah, you know, Macron is, we've got the world of not of, of Trump and Putin, but a world of these wonderful figures like Macron, Biden and Zelensky are emerging. By the way, the majority of liberal commentators in the UK know absolutely nothing about Vladimir Zelensky, and I suspect are probably in for a rude awakening about him in the not too distant future. Not because I know something particularly insightful about him, but it's just normally the way when Western commentators put all their eggs in one particular basket and look at some national leader who they approve of and make this kind of Manichaean division between light and dark, good and bad, they often sell themselves a pup, and I suspect they're in for some sort of forthcoming disappointment. But I could be wrong. This idea that this kind of new liberal centrist world is emerging, I think, is hugely premature. There is a reason why, after 2008, Britain and Europe and America and other first world countries have been through a series of these kind of convulsions. And let's not forget that Turkey, India, and other non-first world countries have also, these kind of BRIC countries, these rising countries, Brazil, for example, have also been through a similar series of populist convulsions. And it's, you know, there are many, many reasons for this. But if centrism, if this idea, this embrace of kind of liberal democracy, free markets, privatization, the whittling away of welfare states, the gradual erosion of pensions, and all the things that tend to happen under the umbrella of neoliberalism, if that was so wildly popular, the reasons why we have had a period of right-wing populism then make no sense. It might possibly be that populations in democratic countries are starting to weary of right-wing populism, but that's to assume that people are generally looking at things in an internationalist perspective. You know, the reasons for one election going one way in France and another election going a different way in America or somewhere else are very often based around local factors. There is a kind of an anticipated downfall of Boris Johnson here in Great Britain, which looks at the moment more and more likely, much to the kind of the glee of those who voted Remain and those who traditionally revile the Conservative Party. But also the bulk of Conservative voters appear to be wearying of the kind of the endless chaos and scandal that is kind of endemic within right-wing populism. You know, part of the whole strategy is to cause so much chaos that people can't remember one scandal after, you know, after the last one has dropped. This may well have had its day, but, you know, again, let us not get ahead of ourselves. It's easy to become very premature about these sorts of things. So here on the update, we are looking at a world situation which is very, very fluid. I mean, as it always is, but particularly at the moment. I sense what this means for Ukraine is something quite fundamental. There have been visits between Antony Blinken, Biden's foreign secretary, and whoever the defense secretary in America is at the moment. A clandestine or semi-clandestine visit to Ukraine in the last day or so, and this can only be informed by the victory of Macron in France, the relief probably in the White House that we're not going to have a French Trump dancing to Putin's tune. And it looks like already the second wave of the Russian offensive in the Donbass is not going very well. So perhaps all this needs is the mass inflow of more weapons from Europe in order to turn Putin's dreams in Ukraine into a rout. I certainly think that that's what America and most European capitals are hoping for, but the failure to secure a reliable ally in France must be to some degree a setback for Putin, or perhaps something he'd already factored in as a long shot anyway. You know, we do know that the man, despite what is said about him, and the attempt to portray him as some sort of deranged madman is anything but. He's quite an astute and calculating individual. Anyway, we're going to finish there, and I'll see if we can drop another update tomorrow. Thanks for listening, and do check us out at explaininghistory.org. There's all sorts of resources and links to old episodes there, and other stuff, a bit of writing. And if you can back the podcast on Patreon, that's always gratefully received. And if not, just pass it on to someone that might find it interesting. Thanks very much. Take good care. All the best. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.